You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Happy Victory Monday to all the 12s out there. Rob Rang and I have a loaded show coming your way, breaking down Seattle's heart-stopping win over New England last night. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. If you're like me, you can't wait to see the spectacular throws and big hits every single Sunday. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It stinks that the day after a thrilling 35-30 win over the New England Patriots, that unfortunately, Rob, our big story today, and this was the story around the league, I don't know if I've ever seen a Sunday where there were so many severe injuries that just happened league-wide. This was unprecedented. Saquon Barkley, Nick Bosa, a whole bunch of other players going down with season-ending injuries. And unfortunately, the Seahawks were not exempt from that, losing both Marquise Blair and Bruce Irvin to year-ending torn ACLs.
Yeah, just a really sad day in that regard, Corbin, because as you said, it was league-wide that the injury issues and just really took out some of the league's biggest stars. I mean, Saquon Barkley and Nick Bosa for the Giants, for the 49ers, obviously, respectively, you know, former top five selections and the absolute superstars, and for them to have season-ending injuries is terrible for the league and for the Seahawks specifically. With Bruce Irvin and Marquise Blair, I mean, you're talking about two of the glue guys on Seattle's defense. I mean, Bruce Irvin, just his positional versatility, his toughness, the fact that he came in with Bobby Wagner and with Russell Wilson in that draft class, for him to come back and to lose him now, not only is a big loss to the team on the field, but and probably an even bigger loss off the field. I mean, it was his pressure that led to that interception that Quentin Dunbar had of Cam Newton that was really one of the big plays in this game, and so a really big loss there. And of course, Marquise Blair, the young star that we've seen him make that transition from safety to the nickel cornerback spot. We're feeling really, really good about that. To lose both those players to ACLs, it really does just kind of suck the wind out of your sails, which should be flying high right now. I mean, after a big-time win against a quality opponent, but again, that is definitely one of the sad realities of this year. And you mentioned the word unprecedented, Corbin. I think that's an important point here. We talk so much about COVID and all of the concerns that people have about the players that might get sick. But it's also just the lack of a true training camp, the lack of a true preseason. Unfortunately, these players now, the second week of the regular season, their bodies are just simply breaking down. I think this is going to be a season of attrition, and that's going to be one of the real storylines, I believe, the 2020 NFL season.
I'm gutted for both players here. Obviously, all these players that suffered injuries, it's the worst part of this sport and pro sports in general. And I guess, though, I especially feel for Bruce Irvin here, because having the opportunity as a beat reporter to speak with him several times this offseason and even a few weeks ago chatting with him about Allen Robinson and some of the other young guys that he's been mentoring, he is really living his best life being back in Seattle. You couldn't find a guy that's happier than Bruce Irvin to be playing with the Seahawks again. You could see how much fun he's having out there, being reunited with his father figure and defensive coordinator Ken Norton Jr., Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, some of the old standbys that are still on this team, and of course the young guys. He's really embraced that mentor role. And he had three quarterback hits the last two games. He's been one of the few guys that's been able to generate pressure, and now you're losing him for the rest of the season. It's a major blow on the field. He was their most experienced sack artist on this team, over 50 sacks in his career. There's a big drop-off after that with the rest of their defensive line, and it's not like this team has been tearing it up getting after opposing quarterbacks these first 2 weeks as it is. So your pass rushing situation went from being a concern to being a major, major concern with this injury. As for Blair, him being one of the best players in training camp, I could make an argument he was the training camp MVP for the Seahawks with a number of interceptions, playing so well at that nickel corner spot. And we saw him make some big plays these first couple weeks of the season. For him to go down, as Carroll said, much different than Irvin. He's at the beginning of his career. This is a guy that's in his ascent, and he's looking to become one of the better young secondary players in the NFC. And he's been so impactful on the field at practice in these first couple weeks, and to see him go down. And his was so different than Irvin's to begin with. Irvin's was that unfortunate non-contact ACL injury. Marquise Blair made a tackle and unfortunately was in the wrong place at the wrong time. KJ Wright, his own teammate, some friendly fire, ended up colliding with his knee and it buckled. And so two different types of things. And like Pete Carroll said, you know, he was conflicted on whether or not the different type of training camp has had an impact on these players having injuries, because he coached at the college level for a long time and they don't have preseason games at the college level, and that doesn't seem to be an issue. And of course, there are injuries like the one Blair had that would have happened regardless of what type of training camp that they had. That was just one of those bad luck injuries. I think Nick Bosa's for the 49ers is the same type of ordeal. His leg just got caught in a funny way. It wouldn't have mattered if he had preseason games or a longer training camp. That was going to be a bad injury with the way that his leg got twisted.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I just think that we are going to see unprecedented injuries run through the NFL this year. I just believe that's going to be the impact of having a lack of a preseason, a lack of players being able to truly hit the way they used to hit, back in previous years. I think that their bodies, frankly, are not ready to make this type of a jump, at least some. And so, again, I think this is one of the reasons that the NFL fully was anticipating these types of things, and that's why the team's rosters have been expanded as far as having like the practice squad. I think that you're going to see that the Seahawks and a lot of other teams, rather than go for some of those big name free agents that might be out there on the street, I think that you're going to see a lot of just basically moving guys up from the minor leagues, essentially. And so I think that that's going to be something that the Seahawks possibly may do here to try to fill those huge shoes that are left behind by Bruce Irvin and Marquise Blair. And before we even move past that, Corbin, I did want to acknowledge some of the other injuries that the Seahawks unfortunately suffered in this game. Trey Flowers had an issue where he had a dislocated finger, apparently, but he sounds like he's going to be fine and then moving forward. But then Philip Dorsett was unable to play for the Seahawks against the Patriots. You know, he would have loved to have gone up against his old team, but it sounds like his injury may be lingering. The Seahawks may have to do something else at the receiver position.
Yeah, I think he's a candidate right now to go on injured reserve, because one of the adjustments the league made this year with COVID is to make it injured reserve as 3 weeks minimum, and then you can activate a player. And so he's still dealing with a foot issue, and Carroll mentioned it today. They're going to have to give him some extra rest, because he tried to come back last week so he could play against his former team, and he just wasn't able to make it back. He's just not healthy. This is a foot issue that's been lingering since before the Seahawks signed him, but they didn't realize that. And so that's the unfortunate situation they're dealing with. I guess if there's a silver lining here, the Seahawks are getting a lot of contributions from other receivers on the roster not named Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf. We'll talk about that more in the third quarter, and obviously as the week unfolds, we'll get a better idea who's going to be replacing Bruce Irvin, what the game plan is at nickel corner. I would anticipate that Ugo Amadi is going to be the guy there. He played pretty darn well yesterday once he checked in for Marquise Blair. Now, those are still developing situations that we'll just have to monitor as the week unfolds. Coming up next in the second quarter, Rob and I are going to be tackling your mailbag questions here. Tons of questions from the 12s after Seattle's thrilling victory over New England at CenturyLink Field. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Help support your local businesses. Whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops, local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community. Because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Victory Monday show, my co-host, Rob Rang. Later in the show, we're going to be tackling some offensive takeaways from the Seahawks' 35-30 win over the Patriots in primetime. Russell Wilson wheeling and dealing. What's new? Some unsung heroes stepping up on offense as well in a big Week 2 victory. But first, let's get to our mailbag. Tons of questions from you guys in the 12s. First one coming from Mr. Unlimited Believer tweets, more base defensive looks coming. So this stemming off the injury to Marquise Blair, Rob, do you think with him being out that we are going to see more three linebacker sets like we saw last year?
Oh, I think that's a possibility, especially considering that your next week's opponent is the Dallas Cowboys, and you know that you're going to want to try and bulk up and to be able to slow down Ezekiel Elliott. Dak Prescott, obviously, a mobile quarterback as well. But at the same time, I think that this is a completely different team than you saw a year ago, where clearly the strongest position on the team, in my opinion, at least on the defensive side of the ball a year ago, was that linebacking core. I think that this linebacking core is even better now than it was then, because of the speed that the Seahawks now have with the addition of Jordan Brooks. But their secondary, in my opinion, is even better, even with the loss of Marquise Blair. And so I really think that you are going to see a lot more of a multiple looks rather than just going back down to that base. But again, against the Cowboys specifically, I think that you could see a lot more base.
See, I think for this week's game plan, I agree with you on that. But I think that Ugo Amadi yesterday played really, really well. And you look at some of the things that are his strengths. He's a really good blitzer, and he made a couple really nice plays in the backfield last night as well. One of them, he wasn't quite able to get the ball carrier down, but it helped allow teammates to get there to make a play. And then the other one, he did finish it off for a tackle for loss. And so I wonder if he will be a good matchup for this Cowboys game. We know they have a lot of weapons on the outside in the passing game, and so I got to wonder, I know you want to slow down Ezekiel Elliott. They've got a lot of weapons all over that offensive side of the football. I'm just not so sure that we're going to be seeing that. But that being said, if Jordan Brooks is going to be the guy that's stepping in for Bruce Irvin, you got to see him rush the passer a couple times late in the game last night. With his athleticism, the Seahawks might decide this is our best 11 right now, getting him on the field. We're just going to let this guy go through his rookie lumps. So we'll have to wait and see. I think there's a better chance you'll see more base defense this week, but I think moving forward, they're not going to regress back to what they did last year, where they're playing 50-60% of the time in base. I think that they really like the secondary they've got, and I think Ugo Amadi has earned the opportunity to get more reps there, even with Marquise Blair getting hurt. I think that you're still going to see quite a bit of nickel. David Wilson tweets, do the Seahawks consider Earl Thomas with Marquise Blair likely out for a significant period of time? We knew we were going to get a question about ET3.
Well, exactly. I mean, and well-deserved. I mean, Earl Thomas is obviously a phenomenal football player. Obviously, the Seahawks just took a significant injury at the safety position. It would seem like it would make some sense. I wouldn't put it past the Seahawks to make that phone call. I think that Earl Thomas burned a lot of bridges, you know, with some of his actions and statements since leaving town. But at the same time, I'd like to think that you know, you would at least make a phone call just to see if there was any interest. And I don't necessarily mean John Schneider making a phone call to Earl Thomas or Earl Thomas's agent. I think that there's at least a phone call or a Zoom call, however you want to say, between John Schneider and Pete Carroll, at least having that conversation and just making sure that as a franchise, that is the direction that they want to go before anybody makes a move on their own.
See, it would be a great story. It'd be a phenomenal story. And there are plenty of 12s out there that would love to see Earl Thomas come back and watch these two sides mend some of the issues that led to his departure. But it's not happening. And in fact, I would be surprised. I know the Seahawks never leave a stone unturned, but I wouldn't be surprised if they don't even explore this. Quandre Diggs is still there. He's healthy. He was just ejected last night. So you don't really need a free safety. You need somebody that can play the slot corner position and also has the versatility to play safety. If I'm John Schneider, and I tweeted this last night, rather than try to bring back Earl Thomas, I actually would see what Deshaun Shedd is doing. He hasn't retired. He's still training, hoping somebody will give him one last chance. He was with the Seahawks in training camp before the 2019 season. And he can play corner. He can play safety. You could put him in the slot maybe. Good special teams guy. And obviously he crosses off the veteran leadership check mark as well. And so that would actually be the former Seahawk that I would maybe kick the tires on instead of Earl Thomas. Now, if Quandre Diggs had gone down, I would have a little bit different viewpoint on this. But they don't need a free safety. So I don't really see them trying to go after Earl Thomas and make that move to have a reunion this quickly after he left. I just think that there's too much animosity between these two sides, and he's not really needed necessarily. Fingo's football tweets, did Jamal Adams actually struggle in coverage, or did he just get hit by some great throws? Were there any actual problems, or did he play fine deep? I guess I would say yes. Is my answer to this one?
Yeah, no, I think that Jamal Adams had a terrific performance. I think that Cam Newton showed that why he was the number one overall selection and a national champion and a former MVP. I thought that it was Cam Newton was played as good as I have ever seen him play at the NFL level, and to do that in obviously just his second game with Josh McDaniels as his offensive coordinator and Bill Belichick's system here with the New England Patriots. I thought it was absolutely incredible performance by both the quarterbacks last night, Corbin. I mean, I watch an awful lot of football, and it is damn rare that you see two quarterbacks that make the caliber of throws that they did last night, Monday night football, Sunday night football. I mean, it was just a phenomenal performance by all of them. And so, frankly, there are a lot of people out there who are very upset with Jamal Adams, who got beat a couple of times in coverage. Well, you should hear the people in New England. They think that Stephon Gilmore, the reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year, got beat by the second-year guy, DK Metcalf. What the heck? I mean, great quarterback play, great receiver play is going to beat some great defensive backs. Jamal Adams is a superstar, and he made some superstar plays last night. But you know what? Sometimes the best get beat. That's what makes the game so fun.
I love the last sentence there. Sometimes the best get beat. And it certainly happened with Stephon Gilmore. It happened with the McCourty twins yesterday. It happened with Jamal Adams. He more than made up for it with some of the huge plays that he made. But he certainly got beat a few times. And I think that's dismissing just how good of a player Julian Edelman is. I saw some people tweeting yesterday during the game, why are they letting Edelman get up? Well, Julian Edelman's a darn good player. He's had 3,000-yard seasons, including last year, and he is clearly the best receiver on that team. You're starting to see N'Keal Harry come on a little bit for them, too. It just feels like he's going to have a breakout game one of these nights. It wasn't last night, but he looks like he's on the verge. But right now, Edelman is that number one guy, and he was able to slip past Adams. Like Pete Carroll said, there's some things that need cleaned up from Adams in coverage, and sometimes he tries to make plays when they aren't necessarily there. You know, he's a guy that takes his gambles, and so there will be some lumps there. As dominant as a player as he is, every player is going to have those misses, and sometimes you just have bad luck too. You can ask Russell Wilson about that on that first throw to Greg Olsen last night. You know, sometimes the great players are just not going to have things necessarily go their way. So I don't think there's any major problems to worry about here. I don't think that he necessarily had a bad night in coverage. He got beat a couple times, but he also made some really good plays. And as you mentioned, that is the best I've seen Cam Newton throw a football since he came in the NFL. He was making some ridiculous throws last night. So if he's throwing like that, New England's going to be in the hunt for another Super Bowl in the AFC. I'm not exaggerating. There's a lot of talent still in that football team, and we know they're well coached. If Cam Newton's throwing like that and they have a couple other receivers step up, that's going to be a dangerous team by the end of the season. J.D. Thomas tweets, do you think with Seattle not having DJ Dallas in the active roster or on the field, Travis Homer won the job between the two?
No, I think that you're going to see this probably bounce back and forth week to week. I think that Travis Homer, I will say this, that I thought that he did a terrific job, especially in that kick return. You know, that was a big kick return. You know, I think it was for 40 yards or so. And I think you could just, you know, obviously the crowd wasn't there, so you can't say things like you could feel the air change. But it just felt like through the television that I was watching from, at least, that you could feel a little bit of the momentum shift there. So I think that Travis Homer, you know, earned that promotion, so to speak, and that he ran with it literally yesterday. So I think that's going to help him. But no, I do expect that DJ Dallas is very much going to be in competition to be taking that spot just about every single week.
I talked to a few inside sources about this in the last week, because with as well as DJ Dallas played in training camp, I kind of was wondering, why is he not getting the opportunity? And I actually did not expect he was going to be active this week based on what I was told, because what it really comes down to is the Seahawks absolutely love Travis Homer's pass protection ability. And it's not that DJ Dallas isn't good in that capacity, because he is a very good pass protector. Both these guys are. But Travis Homer was the best pass protecting back in his draft class, in my opinion. And he showed it on the field last year. So they want that in their third down back. When Russell Wilson is slinging it back there, they want to have a back that is equally dangerous catching the football as he is, you know, in pass protection. They want that. It's extremely valuable. So I think that's the difference right now. But I would have to agree with you. There is a chance this is going to be one of those seesaw affairs where, depending on the opponent, that DJ Dallas is going to get his opportunities. And there may be some games that Travis Homer is inactive. But up to this point, we haven't gotten to see the rookie yet. Fallacies ruin everything, tweets. What's up with all the missed holding calls? Jaron Reed was getting robbed last night. He should have had at least one sack. I will say this, Rob. I didn't get a chance to really see this much in the press box, but going back and watching all 22, there were a couple times where he was basically tackled by one of the interior linemen. So I think that this question has some merit, but at the same time, there are going to be holding calls that are missed. Refs don't get all of them, and there are going to be ones they call that don't look legit. There was one called against Dwayne Brown yesterday that it kind of looked like Sean Locklear's holding penalty in Super Bowl 40, where you're just kind of like John Madden going, where's the hole? So refs are just not going to be perfect. I thought the officiating last night was pretty good for the most part. Some people would say it was one-sided, but I thought for the most part the refs did a good job letting the guys play.
I agree. I think that's what this really comes down to, is that I think that the referees in the NFL are basically trying to speed the game up a little bit. I think that it's a couple of years, been coming, because, you know, it just seems like every other play that you see the yellow flag on the field, and you get these games that last 4 hours, and, you know, and everybody wants the action. And so I think that the referees they've basically said as much, that they, you know, they're looking for the clear and obvious types of penalties. And I think that they are basically trying to swallow the whistle a little bit and allow these guys to play. And then again, I think that the referees basically may have been in awe at times with just the performance that they were seeing from these two quarterbacks. I mean, there's nothing more that hits you in the gut worse than you know, there's an incredible play and it gets pulled back for a fairly inconsequential holding penalty, as you just referenced. And so I think that's something that the NFL is trying to eliminate a little bit more right now. And I hope that they continue this policy moving forward.
Yeah, I just didn't think there were really any egregious calls. There were a couple missed ones on Jaron Reed. There was one in particular that I actually tweeted out earlier that was really, really bad. If I was Jaron Reed, I would have been smoking hot and yelling at refs, because he had a clear opportunity to sack Cam Newton if the guard was not holding him and tackling him. I mean, he had him completely wrapped around his waistline to try to prevent him from getting to the quarterback. And so those ones I can understand. I don't think it was so bad that, you know, you can make the argument one team was getting robbed. I don't think it was that kind of a game at all. Ryan tweets, last question real quick. We get this every week. There's all kinds of questions about that defensive line. This one specifically, should the Seahawks look at signing Marcell Dareus? It seems like a lot of fans have given up hope on Damon Harrison, but I don't know about you. I have a little different take on this question than I would have had the last several weeks.
Yeah, I think that the Seahawks young defensive linemen have performed very, very well. And I think that we saw that in this game against the Patriots. I mean, the Patriots came into this game, Corbin, after, you know, thumping Miami. They had 18 first downs via the running game. And then they come up against Seattle, and Seattle basically holds them down to, I think it was only like 5 or 6, I mean, which is remarkable. I mean, obviously that Cam Newton had a bunch of rushing touchdowns, but yeah, New England had 5 rushing first downs against Seattle. That's those big boys that they were able to play up so well, and to be able to hold up at the point of attack and shut that running game down. So I don't know that they necessarily going to be going for a big guy like a Marcell Dareus. Obviously, there's some need for some edge pressure. And so I think that they're going to look at veteran options. I also think that they might just look at bringing up one of the guys in the practice squad. From a size and physicality standpoint, I think that Shaquem Griffin is a guy that the Seahawks might be looking at as a possible promotion, just to deal with the Bruce Irvin situation specifically.
I would agree with you. I think Griffin needs to be considered to replace him on the roster. That does not mean he's going to be your new starting Sam linebacker. I mean, maybe they might go there. There was a time a few weeks ago that Ken Norton Jr. said he is the backup to Bruce Irvin, and he was spending a lot of time with Irvin at training camp. So that is a possibility, but you at least need to get him back on the roster, get that speed, because that's something they're severely lacking right now. Losing Irvin is only going to make that worse. As far as the defensive line in the interior goes, I actually asked Pete Carroll about this today because there were several plays yesterday that stood out to me during the game watching Anthony Rush, who had just been promoted for the game from the practice squad, wearing number 63, a big 350, 360-pound guy that moves well for his size. He had a handful of tackles in this game, and Carroll said this is the best he's ever seen Brian Monet play, and going back and watching the All-22, he only had one tackle, but he made life really difficult for that interior offensive line of the Patriots, and he was a big reason New England had 20 yards rushing from their running backs in that game. If you would have told Pete Carroll going to this matchup they were going to hold the Patriots to just 20 rushing yards with their running backs, he would have been ecstatic, because they were really worried about that group going into this game, and really they held him in check and away from a few runs from Cam Newton. I thought they did a really nice job containing him as a running quarterback as well. When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to start looking at specifics from the offensive side of the football and Seattle's victory over New England. Obviously, Russell Wilson playing really well, but there was much more to it than just the cook out there dishing out some tasty dishes. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited, until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Victory Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. You just knew that this game, the Seahawks and Patriots, they were going to find a way to have it go down to the wire. It always does. They now have had 3 of their past 4 games end inside the opposing 5-yard line. Now, I guess this is the most ironic part about it, Rob, that in none of those 3 occasions did the team with the football on offense manage to actually capitalize on the situation. Seattle has been the winner now the last 2 times because they stopped the Patriots inside their own 5-yard line on final plays to close out regulation. And they just 17 combined points. That has been the deficit in those 4 games combined. They just don't know how to play a game that doesn't make you have a stroke.
I mean, that's a great way of putting it. I mean, they certainly play really competitive, just beautiful football games. I mean, I love to watch games like that. You know, as I've talked about before, I mean, I'm basically gushed about the quarterback play so far on both sides. And I think that the NFL is a lot more fun when Cam Newton is, you know, kind of showing that Superman thing, because damn, he plays like Superman at times, you know. And so I think that that was remarkable. So to me, again, that is one of the real takeaways I have from this is just how good the play was. But I'll just start off with Russell Wilson. I mean, just the caliber of passing, you know, the very first touchdown, for, you know, to go through all 5 of these different touchdowns and just how different they were and what they asked him to do to make the plays. You know, he escapes through the middle, feeds through the pass or sees his way through the pass rush, ducks his head, and comes back and fires that pass to Tyler Lockett for the very first touchdown. Was just unbelievable. unbelievable. The accuracy showed deep down the field to lead DK Metcalf, to lead Tyler Lockett, to lead Chris Carson on those big deep throws. I mean, just we've talked so much about his deep ball accuracy. What about the toe tap from David Moore? I mean, what an incredible catch that was. You know,
I am still gushing about that one.
I mean, we were asking for David Moore to make plays in arguably the most difficult reception of the night, at least one from the Seahawks, because I absolutely echo your thoughts on Julian Edelman before. Phenomenal performance by Edelman. Every bit as good as Cam Newton, I thought. Just absolutely terrific performance. But again, David Moore, I mean, his body control to make that catch, and then the burst from Freddie Swain, whew. I mean, there is a lot of things when it comes to the passing game to be really excited about with the Seahawks. And to me, I guess the thing that I would be the most excited about, what I was trying to describe before with Russell Wilson's first touchdown throw, is it's almost like he now is so used to there being pressure in his face that he does such a remarkable job of ducking under that, you know, and forcing the linebackers to make a decision, because he will run or just throw in the ball to basically any area of the field with impeccable accuracy. Again, it was just a performance for the ages, in my opinion.
I have consistently used the terms ridiculous and ludicrous when I talk about the throws that Russell Wilson makes, and there's a problem with that now. That word is supposed to mean it's something that's extraordinary or you just can't believe he did it. Russell Wilson's doing it multiple times every game now, and so those words don't work anymore. It's ordinary, and I guess what really amazes me watching the way that Russell Wilson is playing right now. I used this comparison in an article earlier, and a lot of people really liked it, so I'm going to keep rolling with it. I'm a big video game player, and when you get really good at a video game, you get bored eventually. You need to step up the level of difficulty, so you need to set the AI and all that kind of stuff. Russell Wilson, it almost looks to me like, as the game was going on yesterday, he was just toying with Bill Belichick's defense like he was playing a video game and he was just ramping up the difficulty. But in this case, it's like, you know what? That last touchdown wasn't hard enough, so I'm going to let the pressure get here, and then I'm going to throw a bomb to Chris Carson on the sideline. Level of difficulty is going to go up. It just seemed like he was trying to outdo himself every single time. Not like it was done on purpose, but my point is, he just continues to find ways to make your jaw drop. And he's got 9 touchdowns through 2 games. And I believe he's only got 11 incomplete passes during that time. I mean, he is playing at a level right now that no other quarterback in football is. As much as I love Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, right now, for these first 2 weeks, Russell Wilson is on a level all by himself, and then there's the rest of the league. It's Russell Wilson's world, and we're living in it. Now, let's talk about the receivers a little bit here that he's throwing to, because he's getting the ball to everybody. He's slinging it all over the place, but yesterday was really the game that DK Metcalf emerged as an elite receiver in the NFL, because that was the best corner that he's probably going to play against all year. And Stephon Gilmore, the defensive player of the year, the reigning defensive player of the year, that led the league in interceptions, had 20 passes defensed. And not only did DK Metcalf outperform him physically, and he got under his skin. I mean, you could just tell that Stephon Gilmore is like, I'm not used to somebody owning me like this. And yet Metcalf had almost 100 receiving yards, and he beat Gilmore for a 54-yard touchdown that really showed how far he's come as a route runner. He got inside leverage, and with a guy that size that can run like that, he ended up just turning the corner on a skinny corner route, and Gilmore was able to catch back up to him, but it doesn't matter. With that big frame, Wilson throws it over the top. That's near impossible to cover, and Gilmore ended up missing the tackle after the ball gets in Metcalf's hands, and he scored. Those type of plays, if you're the corner, you just got to say, all right, well, there's nothing I could have done on that. You're going to see that a lot from Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf.
Yeah, I mean, it was, again, a terrific performance. Just the focus and the physicality that Metcalf has played with. I mean, that was, to me, that was one of the things that had me so excited about him coming out of Ole Miss. I mean, I've used the comparison to Julio Jones from, you know, the day I first started watching this player. And then when the Seahawks drafted him, of course, and I was saying, hey, I think he's going to be Julio again. To see him, you know, show that type of playmaking ability, you know, just to see this young player really be able to harness that, you know, just the his DNA of just being an elite athlete, you know, a big, strong, unbelievable athlete. But the types of routes in which he's running now, the willingness to play physical. I mean, it was a terrific play for the touchdown. Okay, we all saw the touchdown. You know, he catches the ball, he collects it over his shoulder, which is very difficult to do. And as you mentioned, Corbin, that's the big physical corner in Gilmore who still is able to tackle most receivers at that point. But he just kind of runs through it like he's tissue paper. I mean, he just kind of waltzes into the end zone like it was nothing. But the one that got me the most excited is one on the left sideline where he buries his head and drives Gilmore for another 8 or 10 yards. I mean, he took the game to the reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year as a second-year player.
And the run blocking.
Exactly. And so that's the thing is, you know, Pete Carroll was gushing about after the game that this is a really special player. He's absolutely right. The Seahawks have a couple of really special players. And, you know, the most exciting part about him is that Russell Wilson is playing at the peak of his career, you know, or the peak that I've ever seen. And DK Metcalf just feels like there's just so much further he can go.
And this was the other thing that jumped out to me, aside from the run blocking. I think that's really what got under Gilmore's skin, is that DK Metcalf, every run play was just getting into his grill, driving him downfield, and that demoralizing when you're a corner. You're not used to a 230-pound receiver that's built like a tight end, but he runs like a track star. You're just not used to seeing that kind of a guy getting his hands on you and just driving you back. And you could tell that by the middle of the game, he was getting really tired of it. And that's why you had a scuffle on the sideline and Metcalf probably just laughing the entire time with Gilmore trying to come after him. But the other thing that really impressed me looking at his game was that he played every single offensive snap last night. All 63. He never checked out of the game when the Seahawks were on offense. And he had been gearing up for this game all week long. The Seahawks have been playing press coverage against him in practice to prepare him. I'm sure he heard some of the noise that, oh man, this is a big matchup. He's got Stephon Gilmore going against him. Now he's saying, Stephon Gilmore who? I mean, he just went out there and made him look like an ordinary cornerback. And then you've got Freddie Swain, the sixth round pick out of Florida. I can't say enough about this kid, and it's now becoming apparent to me. You and I talked about John Ursua when they waived him a few weeks ago. We were surprised by that, but it's all adding up now. The thing that Freddie Swain has, one of the things that Freddie Swain has that Ursua doesn't, Ursua's a good athlete, but he's not a 4-4 guy. And Freddie Swain showed off those wheels after he caught that shallow crosser yesterday, albeit against broken coverage. That shouldn't matter, though. He ran a good route, and once he got into space towards the sideline, you could see that 4-4 speed, his special teams ability. He recovered a fumble against the Falcons last week. He had a couple plays he was in on last night on special teams. You want to endear yourself to Pete Carroll? Be a receiver that's also good on special teams. So I continue to be really excited about what I see from this kid. And going into camp, I thought maybe he can make the team as a special teams guy because of his return ability. Now you're seeing this guy is a really sound route runner, and he's learned this offense far quicker than John Ursua did last year.
Well, he certainly is making some big plays. I mean, that touchdown was an impressive play. As you mentioned, it was a broken coverage. But at the same time, it just seems like every time Freddie Swain gets the ball in his hands, he has instant acceleration. I mean, he just goes from 0 to 60 as well as probably anybody on the Seahawks roster, which is remarkable considering, you know, you have DK Metcalf in it while injured right now, Philip Dorsett, as well as Tyler Lockett, three guys who have run in the 4.3s all faster than Freddie Swain. But my goodness, it just seems like he's comes out of a cannon, and so he just kind of obliterates pursuit angles, and we saw that. You know, it's probably the second easiest touchdown the Seahawks are going to have all year long after the so beautifully blocked screen play to Chris Carson in that win over the Falcons in Week One, and that's where I would say is again another area that I think that the Seahawks on offense deserve a little bit of credit. I think that Brian Schottenheimer deserves some credit. If you're all these great plays that Russell Wilson is making, I think that the Seahawks running backs, the physicality from Carson, as well as Carlos Hyde putting his shoulder into some guys. I mean, I thought that was an impressive performance. And then the offensive line, specifically Dwayne Brown. I think that when we saw the injury happen early on, at least for me, I thought, well, that could be catastrophic for this offense. And for him to be able to come back and gut through that, after getting rolled up on a little bit, I thought it was a remarkable performance by him. And geez, just watch Dwayne Brown sometimes in pass protection. For a man as big as he is, it really is remarkable, his balance and his quickness.
I don't want to talk about the middle of the offensive line. I mean, this line in general, I don't think Pete Carroll is just blowing smoke. They obviously gave up some pressure a few times last night. But again, the big reason that this offense is moving the ball the way that they are is Russell Wilson is having he's having plenty of time in the pocket most of the time to be able to make these downfield throws. This line has exceeded all expectations through the first couple weeks with three new starters. I think Ethan Posick is playing really darn well. Damian Lewis, you take the penalties that he's getting, he's gotten three holding penalties in two games. But you take those out of the equation, he has been a mauler in the run game, and I thought he looked pretty good in this game in pass protection too. And Brandon Shell, nothing flashy about him, but he's not getting penalized like Jermaine Ifedi did, and I think he is showing that he is superior in pass protection. And so I think that this group all around is definitely better than they were last year. We're seeing it on the field play out, and yesterday we were able to get the running game going, over 150 rushing yards to go on top of Russell Wilson's heroics, throwing the football, tossing five touchdowns. I guess this is how I want to close this out, though. We talked about the weapons on the outside, talked about the offensive line being better. I just want to throw this number out here because this just tells you how incredible the performance by Russell Wilson was last night. The Patriots gave up 13 passing touchdowns in 2019 in 16 games. Russell Wilson threw five last night against the same secondary led by Stephon Gilmore. Almost 40% of what they gave up in a full season happened in one night last night. That is how spectacular Russell Wilson played and is playing right now. Again, he is just on a whole other stratosphere right now compared to all the other quarterbacks in football. There's a couple other guys that are maybe close, but Russell Wilson right now is just on a different planet compared to everyone else. And that stat definitely paints the picture when you consider just how dominant this secondary was last year, coached by Bill Belichick and company, not giving up touchdowns. For him to go out and throw five against this defense is a remarkable accomplishment. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's Throwback Tuesday. We're going to revisit the Seahawks' most recent game against the Cowboys. We'll actually look back at the last couple of games they played, some pretty interesting contests between these two teams, and then we'll look at some defensive takeaways to put a bow on Seattle's Week 2 victory over New England. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks!